Hello, hello, and welcome back to episode number 6 now, Oscar, of the Punchin' Podcast on the Sports Gazette, the home of all combat sports. Oscar, mate, it's been an absolute wild week for the MMA world and for boxing as well. What have you been up to much? You been out and about recently, or a bit of a chilled one before Christmas?
Yeah, a bit of a chill one before Christmas. Obviously, paying close attention to the UFC because that kind of dominated the headlines this weekend. We had Leon Edwards and Paddy the Baddy. From a British perspective, that was obviously really intriguing. And in terms of boxing, we obviously had a bit of a circus with Jake Paul on the weekend. And then there was actually a very interesting flyweight fight between Sonny Edwards and Dan Rodriguez, where Sonny Edwards, our British champion, lost his title in a really good fight, but obviously didn't do himself any disservice there. He still gained a lot of recognition from the fans and everything. But now we obviously, in terms of boxing, we're looking forward to this Day of Reckoning, which I'm sure we'll touch on towards the end of the pod. But obviously, at this stage, we've got a lot to get through in a UFC sense. So looking forward to it, mate.
Yeah. I saw the news of that Sonny Edwards fight actually. And then in the week we had a little bit of a different sort of style of the Punchin' Pod, sort of a news roundup go up on the Sports Gazette YouTube channel. So don't forget to check that out if you haven't. But yeah, as you said. Obviously this week's been dominated by UFC 296. We have the two English boys in Paddy the Baddy and Leon Edwards come out both with wins, both successful. Leon defending his welterweight belt against Colby Covington. I guess we'll start there. Oscar, we'll start at the main event of UFC 296. There was a lot of build up, and I mean there always is with a Colby Covington fight week. He always tries to get under an opponent's skin, and he's got that way about him. But I think this week, especially after the press conference on Thursday, I believe, and the comments that were made by Colby, I think this week, and even Dana said it after the press conference, pay-per-view sales, believe it or not, actually went up 25% during the press conference. So whether you love him or hate him, he draws eyeballs into the fight, Colby Covington. And I think we were just speaking off air, we saw a different Leon Edwards sort of going into this sort of fight. He's always calm and he's always cool, and he always seems to have ice in his veins leading up to a fight. But then that comment obviously about his past father, we saw him react to that, and I think any normal human would find it hard not to react to that. And everyone thought going into this fight, if that's the one thing that Colby could maybe try and get under Leon's skin, and if Leon can go in there and he can go in there and be an emotional fighter, and he normally fights so emotionless. So if he can go in there with his emotions heightened, then maybe Colby might have a chance of Leon overcommitting to some shots and Colby grappling him to the ground. But we just didn't see that at all. And even I thought going into the fight Leon was a level above. I just didn't realize how easy it would be. I didn't realize how bad Colby would be, but also how good and smart Leon was going in there. I think from a Leon point of view, we saw him as his usual self, as he's cool, he's calm. He went in there and just did what he does. He just goes in there and he's so precise. He's so sharp, and he's so He never overcommits on shots. One thing that maybe you could sort of say about Lee, question Leon about sometimes he should go for the finish, and that's maybe what's just holding him back a little bit. Because I think Colby on Saturday night, Sunday morning was there to be finished. Honestly, that was one of the worst Colby Covington performance I think we've ever seen. I think he went in there, and as Dana said, he looked old, he looked slow, and he just didn't put that pressure on that we're normally used to seeing in Colby Covington. I think what's so good about Colby is that his gas tank is usually amazing. He usually puts that pressure on, grapples you to the ground, and just tries to dominate you in that grappling. And Leon dominated him in the grappling and actually took him down a couple of times. And I think Leon wanted to show that, you say that thing about my dad, I'm gonna try and dominate you in all areas. And he just put a little bit of a beating on Colby all 5 rounds. As I said, I think Leon could have finished Colby, and that's what I was saying by the end of the fight. I was like, go on, just go that extra, put that extra 5% into it and try get him out of there. Because we saw against Nate Diaz, and Leon has had tendencies to do this where he's cruising in a fight, and then all of a sudden he lets a fight just sort of pass and flow by, and then all of a sudden one punch can nearly change it the other way, like against Nate Diaz. So I was conscious that Colby maybe from out of nowhere could take him down and do something in the grappling, and he did end the fifth round on top of Leon. But yeah, I think it was a pretty dominant display by Leon, and Colby being out the cage for 2 years. Look, you wait your time like Michael Chandler's doing against for the fight against McGregor. You wait those number of years for the big opportunity, but when you get in there, as he said, ring rust plays a factor, and he might not get that chance again. So, yeah, brilliant, brilliant performance from Leon. And Colby, I don't know what you do with that asshole now, but so.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I was very impressed with Leon, how measured his approach was, especially given the build up, how quickly it became very dark. He dealt with that emotion in such a constructive way, which obviously just shows his professionalism as a fighter. And yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about the UFC in terms of the narratives behind certain fights. Obviously, this one, as I mentioned, was a very dark build up, and we're going to talk about Strickland and Du Plessis, how these sort of narratives emerge in the UFC. And they obviously, you mentioned a, what was it, 25% rise in pay-per-view sales. I mean, it's quite concerning that this is the type of stuff that are going to bring eyeballs to the sport, but that is part of the business, I suppose. But obviously, yeah, in terms of that fight between Leon and Covington, I was interested by the first round, especially how Leon was switching stances a lot between southpaw and orthodox, and it seemed like he was getting his best work off from the orthodox stance in terms of landing shots. But I think from my perspective, he was switching between stances to almost, one, find his range, but also show his opponent different looks. And I guess that kind of demonstrates that Leon has so much more to his game than what a lot of fans might think. So obviously he's now established himself, like you say, as this all-round great mixed martial artist with a fantastic ground game, fantastic striking. I mean, he's got so much in his locker.
And
So,
mate, he beat up Colby's leg. Colby's lead leg was smashed up. I believe it was his lead leg. Yeah, it was smashed up. And the thing is, when you do that to a fighter like Colby, his forward moving pressure is just so taken aback because he can't move on that leg. So yeah, solid performance from Leon, to be honest.
yeah, obviously we're gonna move on from Leon in just a minute, but I did want to say quickly one thing I did notice is, again about Leon is how physically strong he is in the cage, almost deceptively so. And obviously the next fight will probably be Bilal Muhammad, but then do you see a potential future for him at middleweight? Obviously you've got Strickland and Du Plessis there currently, and they seem to be fairly big guys for the weight, but do you think Leon could hold his own in that division?
Yeah, I do. I think that is a viable option in the future. As you said, I think he's still got. I'd like to sort of see him just finish his own business first in his own division. As you say, we've got the next fight, and Dana's pretty much confirmed that there will be Bilal next. Obviously, the rematch there with the first fight ending in the eye poke. So I think the rematch there for Bilal like is due. I think it is his time now, considering he has climbed up the rankings and he's now number two at welterweight as well. And I mean, I think Leon beats him again anyway, to be honest. And then, as we'll talk about in a minute, Shavkat got a fantastic win in welterweight over Stephen Wonderboy as well. So I think I think Shavkat will bring probably, arguably Leon's biggest test to date in his career. I think Shavkat is an absolute animal. I think he's on such a good run at the minute where that would be a very hard and good fight for Leon. But yeah, as you said, if he can get through his contenders, then maybe. I know there was talks when Izzy was champ at maybe Leon going up and fighting Izzy, but I think with middleweight as well, I think like with Leon, I think there's business there for Strickland to finish off in middleweight. We obviously had the press conference and you talked about I mean this beef that seemed to surface between Strickland and Du Plessis. So yeah, you've got a couple of decent fights there, but hey, we've seen Volkanovski go up to lightweight twice in the past year now, I believe, to face Islam Makhachev. And we've seen a lot of Lee and Leon's talked about it in the pre-fight build-up that he wants to go up one day. So yeah, I mean, hey, why not? Dana won't say no to it.
Yeah, I think if there's one fighter in that division that Leon could consider avoiding is it is Shavkat Rakhimov, obviously off that performance that we'll touch on in a minute. But then, yeah, we'll move quickly on to Paddy Pimblett, who got
Yeah.
a impressive win over Tony Ferguson. And one of the most interesting narratives in the build up for me was the fact that Tony Ferguson was training with who was it? It was
David Goggins.
David Goggins, yeah, and that almost came out of nowhere, right? Because you've got Tony, who's definitely in the tail end of his career, and I think based off that performance, we've seen that now. We don't know how, like, if he's really got anything left to offer. If anyone's gonna get that extra, I don't know, 3 or 4% out of you, it probably
Yeah.
is gonna be David Goggins, to be fair. Although Paddy
Well,
had his own words in the build-up where he kind of said he doesn't see that form of training transferring over to the UFC, which I kind of get as well, to be fair. But will one thing I wanted to highlight about that particular fight is obviously it was an impressive performance from Paddy, right, against and this was a step up fight, regardless of where Tony Ferguson is in his career, it was still a step up fight, and he got through it, so he passed the test in that sense. But early doors, I noticed Paddy making a few mistakes that where I thought to myself, a fresher fighter, a quicker fighter would be able to capitalize on those mistakes. And I think he showed, while it was an impressive performance, he's still got a lot of developing to do as a fighter. And yeah, let's be honest, he's at that stage in his career where he can afford to take a few fights, like development fights, where he can work on his skills and just sharpen those tools of his. But what were your thoughts on Paddy's performance? Would you agree with that he's still got a bit to learn?
yeah, I think there was a lot of added pressure onto Paddy that actually people may have not even considered. I think going into this fight, I think there was a lot of talk about Paddy being maybe overrated and sort of the fight after Jared Gordon, people may have and including myself a little bit, maybe thought he lost that fight. And then obviously being out of the cage for I think over a year with an injury sustained in that fight. So I think for Paddy, as you said, it definitely was a step up, Tony Ferguson. And look, he got the job done and he didn't seem to really break a sweat in terms of it was sort of a fight against a Ferguson who, look, we know going into this fight, there was talk of maybe we see old Tony come through and is training with David Goggins, and David Goggins being like, oh, Tony's the only one who survived Hell Week. And look, we know that about Tony. He has great cardio and he's always going to press forward. But I think we're at a point now with Tony where probably enough's enough. And that's hard to say because he's an icon, he's a legend, and he's a tough motherfucker. And look, he will always be an absolute hero. But I think when you're facing fighters like Paddy, who is still fresh, he's still young, and he does have holes in his game, and Tony didn't even seem to really do a whole lot to sort of put Paddy in a lot of trouble. I think Paddy did well just to sort of stay out of range, pick his shots, great groundwork. And when you're dominating, when dominating is maybe a strong word, but when you're putting pressure on someone on the ground like Tony, who used to be this amazing ground artist, he can submit you off his back. And against Paddy, there was some great elbows when he was on his back, and he still did look dangerous. But what's that now? Tony's maybe sixth loss in a row, I think, maybe fifth loss in a row. I just think for Tony, it's a nice passing of the guard to be like this young and up and coming fighter is can come through, and I think Tony's only going to do damage to himself if he's going to carry on fighting. But he's not in the top 15 anymore, and Paddy wasn't in the top 15. So it's sort of like even if Tony was to continue on fighting, he wouldn't be even fighting ranked guys. So it's not even worth sort of, no disrespect to Paddy and any young fighters up and coming, but it's not even worth Tony's time to fight these younger and up and coming guys, because if he wins, so what? Where does he go? Do you know what I mean? And it's the same with these young guys. And Paddy said it a lot coming into the fight. It's sort of a lose-lose for him because if you beat Tony, great, but people are saying Tony's washed and he's finished. And if you lose to Tony, then your career's at sort of a point of sort of where'd you go from there? So look, solid performance from Paddy. He might go into the top 15 now. And look, you're talking about fighters. I don't even know who he could fight in there. You've got maybe a fight, maybe against, I don't know who's booked up to fight. Drew Dober, maybe Dan Hooker might be a good matchup for him. But for Ferguson, unfortunately, I think it's the whole Donald Cerrone thing. I just hope they don't let Tony drag out his career and him just to get hurt even more early. So yeah, a solid fight from Paddy though.
Yeah, no, I agree with those sentiments. I think Paddy early doors, he got caught with his chin in the air a couple times, I
Yeah.
noticed. So that's something that he's going to have to address as he steps up the levels. And with Tony Ferguson, I would also like to see him retire. But if we move on to another fighter on the card who's an icon of the sport, is in Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. What were your thoughts on that particular fight? If you was to sum it up quickly with Shavkat Rakhimov extending his unbeaten run there.
Yeah, I mean, Shavkat's a beast, and we knew this going into the fight. He's undefeated in the UFC. Everyone was avoiding Shavkat. And I mean, fair play to Wonderboy. He gets in there and he fights whoever, and as you said, he's a legend in the sport. And it's unfortunate because look, for sentimental value, I probably would have wanted Stephen Thompson to maybe win the fight because he talked about going on one last run for the belt. So even coming into the event, maybe we as fans, we might see a couple retirements with Ferguson and maybe even Wonderboy, because look, Wonderboy looked okay. I don't think he looked overly awful. I just think Shavkat is a different animal, and I think Shavkat is a future champion. And it's hard to say that when Leon's the current champion, because Because I think Shavkat gives Leon all sorts of problems. I think he's great on the ground. I think he's very strong against the cage and he's got great striking. So I think, yeah, I think Shavkat just put on an absolute clinic for Stephen Wonderboy. He submitted him, obviously, great submission game. And yeah, he's an absolute beast now. And if we're talking about sort of Bilal is going to get the next shot for Leon, I think Shavkat. Maybe Shavkat Colby. Maybe that's a fight for the future. I mean, again, I think Shavkat would win that fight. But that Colby's number three ranked now. He might go lower after on the weekend. But Shavkat's in the top five now, and anyone in that top five who's going up against Shavkat will have a tough night.
Yeah, no, great action on the weekend, and something we did see outside the octagon, which was an interesting feature to the night, was that brawl between Strickland and Du Plessis. And we were
Yeah.
obviously talking briefly off air about this, and when we're comparing combat sports like boxing and MMA, one big difference that I have noticed is the way that both sports promote themselves. And you've got the UFC, where whether it was an intentional or not from Dana, obviously he came out in the press conference and said, look, it was an oversight from my part to
Yeah.
sit these two fighters in the same vicinity. But at the end of the day, like, he is going to be rubbing his hands together behind the scenes, because that little brawl in the crowd is what's going to generate a significant amount more ticket sales, pay-per-view buys. I mean, I was already excited for the fight, but that just reinvigorated my excitement. Like,
Yeah.
I think Dana, like, he knows what he's a very clever businessman. He knows what he's doing when it comes to the promotion. Whereas if something like that happened in boxing, I mean, we've seen similar altercations between the likes of David Haye and Derek Chisora, where there was a brawl between those two at a press conference and they had their licenses suspended. And then Frank Warren had to draft in the Luxembourg board, which was a whole mess in itself. But it goes to show that there's certain things that aren't deemed acceptable in boxing, and that's one of those things. If that happened in the crowd at a boxing event, both fighters would be facing suspensions, and the fight would potentially be scuppered altogether. So it's just interesting to draw those sort of comparisons. But
Well, mate, if you look at probably the most infamous crowd brawl we've seen in the UFC is when Khabib, after McGregor,
yeah.
jumped the fence and attacked Dylan Danis, funny enough. But the thing is, when you say he's probably rubbing his hands together, he's licking his lips at the prospect of maybe this gaining more eyeballs. I think he is and he isn't. I think, look, he's always going to light the attention around the fight, and I guess you could say any bad publicity is good publicity. Is that the saying or
Any
something like
publicity
that?
is good
Yeah, that.
publicity, yeah.
There we go. And I mean, look, he likes. I do think Dana likes it when there's a bit of back and forward. No one likes a boring pre-fight. Do you know what I mean? Everyone likes a bit of needle. But I think when it involves family, that's where I think a line can be crossed. We saw it with Colby and Leon's dad, and then we saw the seasonal press conference. Not something we see often, that Dana puts together, but we saw the seasonal press conference on Thursday, Friday, with Sean O'Malley, Chita Vera, Volkanovski Topuria, and obviously Sean Strickland, Dricus du Plessis. And that was an amazing press conference. But obviously, in that, we had a comment from Dricus du Plessis about Sean Strickland's past experience with his father and the troubles he's been through. And yeah, I think there is a line. There definitely is a line. I think it's okay being a bit of, like with Colby, it's okay being a bit of a shithouse. And it's kind of like people can sort of start to begin to like the character that you portray. I think having a bit of a character and having a bit of back and forward with your fighter as your character is okay. I think, look, McGregor did it for years and fighters loved and fight fans loved it. But then when you cross the line to just becoming an asshole, that's where I think you start to lose fans, actually. And I think fighters need to realize that. I think Colby, especially Colby, when he said that comment, didn't realize actually the reaction that he would get from actually people just thinking he's an asshole and people just turning against him. And the same with Du Plessis. I just think it was unnecessary. Look, you can have a bit of back and forward, you can say what you want to say. And Dana said it where he's never going to tell a fighter what to say and what not to say because he always says it's the fight business. It's look, you don't have to be best buddies to get in there. And Dana summed it up perfectly. You can say whatever you want, but 24 hours later, you're gonna have the chance to punch that guy in the face. So it's one of them where, look, say whatever you want, but for me personally, I think when you're bringing in people's past relatives who have died and troubles that you've had growing up, I think, come on, like. Do you know what I mean? What do you think on the whole bringing in family members and stuff like that? Is there a line?
I think there's definitely a line, and fighters have crossed it many times before, so it's not the first time this has happened. It certainly won't be the last time. And to an extent, it does go to show how raw some of these fighters are. I mean, when you factor in the thing that these fighters aren't going to be the most media trained of individuals, they're not footballers. So the way they conduct themselves in front of the camera is going to be completely different. They're not going to have a filter a lot of the time in terms of the things they say. That doesn't justify them saying these outlandish comments because that's just completely horrible for their opponent to have to deal with. But I think it's up to the media and whoever else to actually protect these fighters, not just in a physical sense, but also in a sort of, as you say, publicity sense, where it's okay to be outspoken, but there's certain instances where you will cross the line, and that was certainly one of those instances. So obviously that should be limited in the
What do
future, I
you
think.
what do you do in terms of sort of how do you sort of just let this go? Someone asked Dana, he said, is it sort of a thing where you've got to sit down with Colby and be like, hey, like that's a bit too far?
I think with those instances, it's definitely worth having a conversation with the fighter behind the scenes. You don't want to cuss him out at a press conference in front of all the media, but take him to a side behind the scenes and say, look, we like the fact that you're trying to promote the fight. We like the fact that you're trying to build your profile. These are the things that should be encouraged in combat sports, but there's means and ways of going about that, and we would advise you to refrain from bringing those comments into a public space, and maybe even encourage them to apologize on Twitter or something. Release a statement saying,
I
"Look,
mean,
I
look,
think
I
I've
think.
gone too far in that sense."
Look, I think an apology might be too maybe a step too far for fighters like Colby because I think that sort of ruins their character. I think with Colby, yeah, as you say, I think they should just have a little chat behind closed doors because apparently Colby's not even that guy behind closed doors. Apparently Colby's actually a really nice guy behind all this. And actually, when Leon and him were facing off, interestingly, there was a camera that was for the UFC embedded, and Colby said to Leon, "I was in character. I was in character. I'll see you on Saturday night." So it's sort of that thing where he kind of like let a bit of his true self come into it. Where actually, does he feel bad for that comment? And now he's trying to reassure Leon, "That's not who I am. I was in character."
Yeah, no, I think that could be. I think you playing a character does not excuse those
But I
kind
think
of
you're never going
comments.
to see him apologize because that obviously
No.
means, yeah. But I think.
I think in certain instances that can be doable. Like obviously fighters will have their own prides at stake. I completely understand that. But then I don't think it takes anything away from the promotion if they was to release a tweet saying, Oh, well, maybe I went too far with that comment, but I'm still gonna
Yeah,
smash your face in.
or even a comment from the UFC themselves saying we don't condone Colby's statement, and like we're gonna take action behind closed or whatever it may be. But yeah, it is hard because I feel like you never want to undermine a fighter and sort of their brand. But yeah, and I think the difference is also in boxing and UFC, you've got promoters. In boxing, you've got promoters to sort of sell the fights for the fighters. Like with Daniel Dubois, he doesn't have to be good on the mic because he's got his daddy Frank Warren sat on the other table that can
Yeah.
promote his fight for him. Whereas the UFC fighters, they have no one. They have to promote them fight themselves, no matter how, so that sort of makes the job even harder. So yeah, I mean, and also you look like a bigger asshole if you lose.
Yeah.
Like Colby did, so
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. As you say, you've got you're not gonna gain any new fans by saying stuff like that, because all the fans will just gravitate to Leon and
yeah,
back him
exactly.
instead. So you're not doing yourself any favors by saying stuff like that. I think that's the biggest thing that's come from this, is the actual knock-on effects of these comments. So maybe fighters will begin to realize that there's certain things that just don't need to be said. But anyway, moving quickly on to the last sort of UFC talking point, and I believe Michael Venom Page has just signed for the UFC. So that's a very interesting development. I remember right from the beginning of me sort of taking an interest in MMA, MVP was one of those fighters that I was quite captivated by,
Oh yeah.
purely down to his style. I love that elusive, hands down approach from any fighter. I was always a big fan of Nassim Hamed and Roy Jones Jr. in boxing, and I think their style works in boxing. I'd be interested to know from your perspective whether you think that style works in the UFC to the same extent, because obviously we've seen MVP with those highlight reel moments in certain fights against lesser opposition, but I recall in Bellator, for example, where he came up against Douglas Lima, who in the first fight, I believe, comprehensively outfought him, and then in the rematch, brutally knocked him out. So what do you think the future holds in the UFC for Michael Venom Page?
Yeah, look, I've only seen a few bits here and there of Michael Venom Page, but I've actually look, he's a solid fighter. He's got the sort of Wonder Boy approach stance where it's very karate like, it's very hands down approach. I think, boy, Dana must rate him if his first fight's against Kevin Holland. That is a tough matchup as your first debut fight, but he has the name Michael Venom Page. He's known around the MMA community and around the combat sports community, really. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but he's been doing a lot of things outside of MMA. I think he did one bare knuckle fight maybe,
He
and
might have done,
I
yeah.
think yeah, and I think obviously he's a big name and he's very well liked amongst the fans, but yeah, against Kevin Holland, that's a tough fight. And as you said, it's not just Michael Venom Page that's been announced this week. We've had so many announcements from Dana. We've had Ian Garry, who pulled out of UFC 296 because of pneumonia, is fighting Jeff Neal. That's a solid fight. Gilbert Burns, Jack Della, that's another great fight. This is all for March 9th. I mean, Dana's been announcing a lot of fights recently. Petr Yan as well on the same card as MVP. But yeah, I mean, it's a top fight for MVP, and if you can beat Kevin Holland, that's a big first name on his UFC CV. So yeah, I mean, it's a solid. I think it's a good signing from both parts. I just wanted to also just go back to UFC 296 on some fights we didn't mention, because like Michael Venom Page coming into the UFC, and we've got other fighters that are going to impact a few divisions. sort of Ian Garry. He was meant to fight Vicente Luque. He pulled out of this one, and the co-main event as well, flyweights. I don't think the flyweight boys get talked about as much as they should. Alexander Pantoja defended his belt. I think, yeah, that again, that co-main event was a solid fight. I think Pantoja going into the fight, I thought he'd win. I thought he was much stronger, much solid overall fighter. But Brandon Royval, he's looked very solid on his run up to the championship. I just don't think it was the right time for him yet. Come back maybe in a couple years. And with Pantoja, I don't know who you put him up against now. Maybe the winner of the Moreno fight. And then probably I'd say knockout of the night, Josh Emmett. Wow, against Bryce Mitchell, he put his lights out. That was a great fight. Sort of in the featherweight division there, two ranked boys. And to do a knockout like that on Bryce Mitchell, who's a tough motherfucker in his own right, he sparked him clean out, stiff as a board. And Josh Emmett, that puts him right up there in sort of the featherweight rankings once more. I think obviously we have the featherweight title between Topuria and Alexander Volkanovski back fighting in a couple months. But Josh Emmett, look, he's right up there. If Topuria can get a fight at number five, Josh Emmett had his last interim fight. He lost to Yair Rodriguez. But yeah, a very impressive knockout there. Cody Garbrandt as well got he's back and got another impressive win. So he was calling out for I believe he was calling out for Davison Figueiredo, so we can see that would be a very interesting fight, that one. So yeah, mate, a very, very good card on the weekend, and very exciting, as you mentioned, with Michael Venom Page, Sean Strickland, Dricus du Plessis. A lot of very, very good fights coming up in the world of UFC. I don't know if you quickly wanted to talk about maybe the Jake Paul fight or.
Yeah, I'll touch on the Jake Paul fight. I mean, we briefly mentioned it off air, and I think it was a case of obviously, I believe this opponent was 10-1. I think you said obviously a record that looks good on paper, but then if you dissect that and actually look at who the guy has fought, you realize that Jake Paul was actually probably the better fighter, which is quite unbelievable, really. But he's got through that opponent who was obviously not really up to it, and I don't really know where Jake Paul goes from here. I know we mentioned briefly on the news round that Tommy Fury might be fighting Roy Jones Jr. in an exhibition match or maybe
Ridiculous
even a
talk.
professional fight. I don't know, but maybe Jake Paul looks
What
towards
are your thoughts on that, by the way? Roy Jones, Tommy Fury? Because
yeah, as I said
from
before,
where I'm
I'm a big
sitting, I feel like it's absolutely ridiculous, to be honest.
I think it is. I'm a big fan of Roy Jones Jr. and he left an incredible legacy on the sport. Some would even say he went too far, should have retired sooner. And obviously you're seeing now that he just can't let go of it. He's got boxing in his blood, and I think this just gives him an excuse to be involved in some capacity. We've seen him train Chris Eubank Jr. before. Obviously, that didn't go to plan, but I think as long as he's got some involvement in boxing, that's all he really cares about. And this, for him, is the best way of going about that. I don't think any ex-professional, especially in their 50s, should be considering stuff like this. But obviously, you're going to need the right people around you to
And
put you down the right path and.
that's what I'm saying. Maybe we'll end on this, but I mean, well, from Tommy Fury's point of view, it's absolutely ridiculous. And I don't want to hear any chat from Tommy Fury about winning world championships anytime soon. He is an influencer crossover boxer, full stop. Tommy Fury is not a pro boxer. I hope he doesn't go into the pro boxing scene again, because I don't, no one's interested in watching him
Well, he
fight.
can't. He's
I
not good
mean,
enough.
yeah, I mean, I think even he knows that. So any thought, any talk of going into the pro scene, I don't want to hear it from Tommy Fury. He is a simply a crossover influencer boxer. From Roy Jones Jr. point of view, what, he's 55? He could be Tommy Fury's dad. Like, honestly, should we be seeing these guys in a ring anymore?
No, I think in recent years where we've seen even more ex-fighters take part in exhibitions or even some professional bouts, it is very concerning. And a lot of people put it down to the fact that these fighters might retire having not made the money that they wanted to. And then you talk about the lack of a pension in boxing, how there's so many world champions that are left penniless by the time they retire. And this is almost their way of trying to make up for that lo those loss of earnings by obviously, I'm guessing Roy will get paid probably a considerable amount more than some of his biggest world title fights against the likes of James Toney even. So this is when you're offering these fighters so much money, you've got to really have a look at the promotion behind it and think to yourself, well, actually, like, no matter how much money you think this fight's going to generate, is it worth putting that individual's health on the line, and at risk, in order to generate, a considerable pile of money? Even if that fight is going to be well compensated, that does not justify them competing in a professional fight or even an exhibition fight, which can be quite dangerous. It shouldn't be allowed. And that this is the problem with boxing, especially, is the fact that there's no overriding governing body that can actually make that decision to say, look, this fight cannot go ahead. So you're gonna have people out there who are gonna wanna potentially exploit certain fighters like Roy Jones Jr. by offering them a sum of money that's gonna be too tempting to refuse. So I think that's the biggest problem.
The less publicity we can give Tommy Fury and Jake Paul, the better, in my opinion. So I mean, but I'm sure we'll talk about that on an episode nearer towards the fight. Unless there's anything you want to cap off this episode, Oscar, I think that's a good place to leave it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think obviously, as we mentioned at the start, it's very exciting times in the UFC, especially at the minute. But I believe we've got the Day of Reckoning to look forward to. So in a separate pod, we might round up some of those fights once they've actually happened. So I'm happy to leave it there.
Yeah, and the trailer looked amazing on that. I think I sent it you last week, and we both said how good that looked. Go check that out if you haven't seen that already. But yeah, as you said, I think we've pretty much covered all bases. Exciting times in the UFC coming up, especially in 2024. So to be sure to keep up to date with the Punch and Pod episodes all the way into the new year, and then we'll have some episodes. Across Christmas, maybe getting into the Christmas spirit and looking ahead into 2024. But for now, goodbye. Thanks for listening.